Hello, Taurus, and welcome to Easy Does It, your 2025 mid-year reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer, at least for the next hour to 12 hours. Welcome. It is good to be with you. It's a cool, rainy morning here in the Catskill Mountains in upstate New York. It has been a very dry summer, and so we've got a cool, moist day for the cool, moist sign of Taurus. And one thing about the basic properties of the signs is that if you are an Earth sign, you're gonna feel good when there's Earth energy, and if you're a Taurus, you're going to feel good if there is earth and water energy. Venus, ruling planet of your sign, having been born from the sea and also the co-ruler, the exalted ruler of the sign Pisces. So Taurus really blends the concepts of a water sign and an air sign, of water sign and an earth sign. And I don't really know Tauruses who don't like to get themselves in the water one way or the other. And that said, one of the, among the many challenges that we're living in, which are not being cataloged properly, they're not being, we're not being told what they are, and we're not telling each other what they are. We're responding to other things in the environment that are downstream products or superficial ideas, is that we are under a lot of pressure to grow up, to transform ourselves into mature human beings. And you could look around at the world and do a maturity evaluation, and kind of everywhere you look, you would find more and more adolescent immaturity. The whole world seems now to be based on the look at me concept, where you know all you get to do is look, and where it seems like people are getting better and better at throwing up personality armor to interfere with the actual experience of having contact, of having intimate contact. This is not a new problem. Just to follow up on that thought, in 1964, a guy named Dr. Eric Byrne came out with a book called Games People Play. And the premise of that book is that most people interact with one another on the level of games. There's psychological games they play with one another. Somewhat frighteningly, the games, which once you know some of them, once you read through this book, it's quite a short book also. It lends itself well to our ADD time period, though it's important to read the introduction, not just the games. The games are very commonplace, and they were all identified, at least up till that point, were identified in psychotics on locked wards. And so the game theory became an approach that the Dr. Byrne would use to train young psychiatrists how to handle the games that psychotics would use to drag the therapist and the hospital staff into their delusional world. And then what he found was that basically everyone everywhere was playing these these same games, which kind of proved that either, you know, the whole world's a lunatic asylum, or people in the funny farm are not crazy, or we all belong in the funny farm. But I love this fact about it. And the purpose of games is to distract us from intimacy. It is to block intimacy. And there are all kinds of games that often involve money and alcohol and sex and various forms of transactions, and they're all designed to make sure that a real conversation doesn't start. And it really seems to me like currently the entire world is organized around making sure that a real conversation does not start. Right? And this includes all kinds of scripts that we have to follow, where people start to get real nervous if you get them off script. And I mean, there are some of us who are good at getting people off script. You know, I've read for thousands of clients. I'm pretty good at getting people off script. Not everyone is good at getting people off script, and not everyone has a sense of humor. And these are two things that are going to help you very well, which is to maintain your sense of humor at all times and to do everything that you can do to stay off script and to get others to go off script. The point being that all of us are under immense pressure to wake up. And I'm going to show you your chart and show you where that pressure is likely to be coming from. And remember, astrology is a metaphor. It's a whole bunch of metaphors, but ultimately the whole thing is one giant metaphor, one big symbolic kind of brew of something or another. And this will help honor the pressure that you are under to wake up. And will help you exist in a world where there is the constant drive to put people to sleep, this constant pressure to go back to sleep and to anesthetize others and to get people involved in our fear game, to make them worry about the things that we're worried about. And the fear game, this one needs a name. I'm trying to find the words to write about it. But there seems to be a kind of obsession with fear right now that people don't feel good unless they're afraid of something. That they don't feel good. This has to have been documented previously, and I must have encountered it in my psychology studies. But if you know the name of that, please enter it in the comments. There seems to be this obsession with staying terrified and paranoid and in a state of negative expectation, as if the state of paranoia or negative expectation will in itself stave off bad things happening. That as long as you're worried, bad things are not going to happen, on the logic that the bad things you're worried about don't usually happen. Therefore, if you just worry about everything, then nothing bad is going to happen. The problem with that is it completely saps the vital force. There is nothing left. There's no creativity left if the mind is in a sympathetic state at all times, if the mind is in fight or flight mode at all times. And there's something about the incoming energies, which I think are right now basically the dominant environment. I think more ever than television and cinema and all this, the dominant environment that is absolutely inescapable is the digital environment. And we don't study the digital environment enough. And you may think I'm kind of, losing my way, someone wrote to me recently, for studying the digital environment so much. But it is the thing that we are in, and I would no more avoid the discussion of the digital environment than I would avoid, teaching Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts how to gather firewood and how to make dinner. Once you're in the woods, it's no longer about, getting the archery merit badge. It's about like, okay, what are we doing in the woods? Can we make dinner? Is this going to be a fun camping trip or is it going to be a real drag? And so we're all on this camping trip and we are under a constant adversity. And the constant adversity is that we are being swallowed a little more or a lot more every day, not only by the AI and digital environment, but also by the kinds of content that those environments tend to favor. So the medium is the message, but then there are certain things that are filtered out of the digital environment. And the whole world is becoming the digital environment because now everywhere you go, you bring your phone. There are some scant few people who are capable of leaving their phone at home. I practice doing it. And I maybe 20% of the time, 30% of the time, if I'm lucky. If I go to town, I might not bring my phone. But anytime I'm traveling, I might need directions. That brings us into the AI environment. The constant pounding of news feeds, phone calls, text messages, emails, all kinds of alerts and all kinds of messages. This is being completely swallowed. And this is being swallowed in a universe of disembodiment, which is particularly dangerous for you. Taurus is the ultimate sign of physicality. It is the sign of being in your body. And by the way, when I look down, I'm just checking the time. How can I do this? Let's see, can I move this? I don't need to have my eyes being shifty. But I do need to keep track of where I am for various reasons. You must be in body. And a lot of the ways that you have learned how to be in body are basically being what you might think of as bleached out by the digital environment. And it's not as it's not as simple as yoga. It's not as simple as walks in nature, which are better than yoga. It's not as simple as really anything, because even the concept of disembodied is not properly understood to mean feels like you're going insane in subtle ways, in obvious ways, and overt ways, and just with a constant kind of background stress of feeling detached from who you are. And one of the most important signs that you need to address something is anger. Anger. What you might think of as, well, it can take a number of forms. It could take the form of resentment. It could take the form of some form of outwardly expressed rage. A lot of Taurians practice a form of self-attack, which is very closely associated with a guilt reaction. And these are all about a seemingly ever-increasing disembodied state. And so we might think of your, if life were a big video game, the object of the game, the levels of the game would be re-inhabiting your senses and re-inhabiting the space where your senses enter consciousness. That's called common sense, the sensus communis. Common sense is, we think of it as like, well, you don't use a screwdriver for a chisel, right? Don't use a knife for a screwdriver. Now, that's not what's meant by common sense. What's meant by common sense is the sensus communis, where the expressions of your senses can be found together, and then there is a form of synergy, a form of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts that guides you. And one of the biggest problems that we have with all the introduction of new media is that they mess with the balance of the senses, and therefore it becomes very difficult to guide yourself through existence. Okay, so now with that introduction, perhaps a little more therapy centered than astrology, but truth be told, astrology is a form of therapy. And so unless we are going to be fortune telling, which I am not here to do, I am here to help you in the game of finding your way back into your senses, knowing what your senses are telling you, helping you build your situational awareness, both in situations that do and don't involve people. But what situation doesn't involve people? I mean, I don't imagine you're jumping solo from rooftop to rooftop. I mean, that really doesn't involve people. Every other situation that we're in involves pretty much, I can think of a couple, maybe, but involves people. And when others are not involved, you're the people. You're the person that we need to be paying attention to. Your movement through existence, that we're going to keep our finger on the pulses of that movement essentially by measuring things like anger, love, guilt. Love would include any sense of beauty. Love would include any sense of feeling like you belong here on the planet, which is the only place we know. Okay, let's take a look at this chart. I've got my screen a little bit. Okay, now I can see everything framed up all nice. And I'm still learning how to work this newish video setup. So here is the current solar chart for Taurus. And I don't like having the mic stand in the line of view in these videos. So here's the current solar chart. A solar chart means that we're assuming that your sun is in the sign Taurus, but additionally, it means that you have any reference point in the sign Taurus, principally, other than the sun, your rising sign or your moon sign. And we'll also work with Chiron from about 1977 to about 1983, 84. So Chiron also very important reference point in using this device called the solar chart. And then once we understand that Taurus is our starting point, Taurus is the reference point in the chart, then we know where everything else goes. And where the everything else goes describes the topic that we are going to be speaking about. Where, for example, the action of Pluto is going to be the most likely to be experienced here for you in the 10th house. If we make this into the Gemini solar chart, which is all it takes moving the chart one twelfth of the wheel, Pluto is suddenly in the 9th house, a whole different thing than the 10th house. And that's why there's so much information available in a device as simple as the solar chart. And the most significant thing for you to know, and I always repeat this because I don't think it can be said enough, the solar chart describes the basic properties of the sign. And the really good astrological writers were all good at the solar chart and understood that it is the entire wheel and where all the signs are placed that describes the basic constitution of a person by sign. Okay? And in the solar chart system, I think for Taurus, the single most important thing is that Aries, here's Aries, there's a lot going on in there, as you can see, appears in the 12th place. Aries appears in the 12th. What's the 12th? The 12th is where you don't really exist. The 12th is the 12th is about what's gone missing. The 12th is the aspect of existence where the environment is overwhelming. Pisces has a 12th house feeling to it. The 12th house can represent overwhelmingly large institutions and even structures. I'm going to get a hanky here. The lighthouse is not itching. It's a much rather. Well, this is fun. And I've got my thing looking good. But it's kind of nicer to be in the dark and on the radio. But look, this is a very visual thing. So here we are in the light. Okay, so the thing with Aries is that Aries is where we all say, I am. Aries is a tangible, workable self-concept. It's where we find self-concept. And because your sun or rising is in Taurus, all things Aries are tucked into this dimension of the chart that is the 12th place. Now, you may not be Taurus rising. This will hold to a real degree. And if you're not Taurus rising, study your 12th place. Find out what's there. And if you're not Taurus rising, study where Aries is. If you don't want to do those things, or you don't know how to do those things, which is partly what a reading is for, and partly what studying astrology is for, let's just go with this. And if you happen to have a different rising sign, and you have access to that reading, then follow what I say about Aries in that reading. Because I'm going to talk a lot about Aries, because what we're experiencing now is an absolutely unbelievably rare and strange, verging on impossible development of events in Aries that are pushing every person on the planet in some way to make contact with their real being and open up to who you are, open up to the innate. That's what I call it. The thing about you that is you. And there are two main processes going on. And there's a third involving this little bit called Salacia here, which is, I'm going to get to that. We're going to go through Aries very carefully because it is your blind spot. Those little extra purple lines there, maybe they'll look purple, that are connecting this planet in pencil to this group in red. And the reason that knowing what's going on in Aries is so important for you is that it is likely to be serving as a blind spot for you. In other words, what is in there is very difficult to see, very difficult to notice. And therefore, to relieve some of the pressure that you are under, you want to bring your awareness into that spot and let some of the pressure off and let some of the heat out. And I began by, you know, talking about what a lovely, cool, and moist day it is. It is likely that part of your aversion to what's going on in this Aries part of the chart and possibly other fire signs, with the exception of Sagittarius, which has a very strong affinity for Taurus, I have not figured that out yet, is that it is hot in there and you don't want to bake in a sauna all the time. And many of the influences are bringing some heat with them. But they are also what you might think of as temperature regulating influences. We can go through them. But there are two main processes happening. The longer term one involves Eris in Aries. Eris got to the beginning of Aries in around 1921, got there. It was there in 1921, and then it took about 4 or 5 years to permanently enter Aries, because it was dancing back and forth over the Pisces-Aries line, the Aries point, all through the first half of the 1920s, which none of us remember. So we were all born with Eris in Aries. And this is the broadcast media era. And it is my belief that these eras of broadcast media are more important than any one artist, than any philosophical tradition, than any spiritual tradition, than any teacher, than any other movement in society. That these advances of technology are completely pulverizing everything in their path and remaking it in its image. And what radio does, followed by TV and high-def TV and the internet, is it shreds individuality and it shreds the inner sense of being. And everything is, on one level, it all feels like an inner trip, but in reality, everything is basically being turned inside out. If you're wondering why people have to, it used to be called gramming your food. The notion of taking a picture of a meal and putting it on the internet would no sooner occur to me than like jumping off the house. I might take a picture of my notebook, my keys, but food, something that private and personal. I mean, you guys find out everything that's in my notebooks anyway. I can't hide it. Basically, if it goes in here, it goes out there. The shredding has taken place in your 12th house. In fact, there's almost like this mythical huge 12th house of the entire world being an overwhelming institution, and it has been swallowed by digital conditions, completely swallowed inescapably by digital conditions. This is likely to have had a profound impact on you, even though you were born with Eris and Aries. It is constantly ramping up. The only people who are not, who seem to be maybe immune to ramping up, because they're just kind of, you know, they were born swallowed, are digital natives, right? For them, this is all no big deal, but they're, how do they know what they were missing? How do these people born, like, starting in the late 1990s, know what experience they're not going to be able to have? What is just not on the spectrum of their consciousness? But you know. And you are likely to be able to see a certain degree of what is missing, except for the part about a lot of your I am-ness, let's call it I am-ness, already being in the 12th house, and then the 12th house itself being captured by the electronic universe. Where are you? The good news here is that Eris is really the sigil of this through the entire from 1920 till present into the 2040s when Eris finally leaves. Now there is an answer to that, and the answer is in the form of Chiron. And so if Eris is like an anesthetizing influence that has made it increasingly difficult for you to feel, notice, see, hear, experience who you are in some tangible way, Chiron pulls focus on that. The purpose of Chiron is to act like a kind of a lens with a spotlight that can actually see into the dark spaces. And the 12th is very much a dark space that's not responsive to the normal senses. The 12th house is where we go in dreams. It's where you take ayahuasca, you're in the 12th house. And if you are completely subsumed by digital consciousness, you are also in the 12th house. And there's a strange bending of sensory perception. I'll give you one example that we know something was up in 2020, right? We know, and that part of what was up was that suddenly, I had never even heard of Zoom. Suddenly everything was on Zoom. Everything, every last thing. Harvard, you know, nursery school, elementary school, business meetings, corporate board meetings, the New York State, the SUNY Board of Trustees, all Zoom, 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 Zoom. That was the great big sucking sound of things going on to the internet. On the internet, and this was every facet of life, including basically a digital virus and a digital test. That's for another subject matter. I can't go into it for more than that on YouTube. But what we couldn't bring with us were our sense of taste and smell. And so it was as if the entire society ascended to the internet and we lost our sense of taste and smell. Now, that was blamed on something. But what I'm saying is, in my view, and I am very highly versed in the medical science of what did and didn't happen, there is no explanation for the loss of taste, of sense, and smell that affected many people, except that we know that society ascended to the astral digital plane, and it's very likely that the juice was turned up on, well, we know Starlink is launched, we know that 5G systems were being installed all over the place during the shutdown. Now imagine that we really all did like beam up to the astral plane even more. This has been going, they've been beaming us up every time there's a new ramp up. Well, where does that leave you? This is your consciousness in the 12th house of this cosmic astral plane. That's how we respond to the 12th house, as if it's not real. And then that's where you, even though you're a Taurus, everybody finds themselves in Aries. Everybody finds their I am in Aries. That's why Aries is such a universal sign. And thankfully now, there are these influences. So I started talking about Eris being this disembodying influence and tribalizing, making everyone try to be like everyone else. Well, then comes Chiron. And Chiron is about you being you. Chiron is not so much contrarian, but it is willing to be a maverick and willing to be a pariah, which is not a popular position to be in. But no, regardless of how you describe that distinction or individuality or pariah or whatever, you know, maverick, you don't want to do the thing all the other ranchers do, which is torture your poor cows by branding them. That's how we know the word maverick. It was a rancher named Maverick. Chiron's waking you up from this dream, and it's waking you up fast and furious, and it may be very destabilizing and painful because it is calling you out of an inner slumber that you may not have been aware that you were in the first place. And it is doing so in a part of your chart that is concealed. Remember, this is all a metaphor. So it's a map of consciousness. And so where the awakening is happening is in part of your consciousness that is difficult to access. And so there, you may be in the middle of an awakening that you don't recognize as an awakening. You don't know what this pain that you're feeling or this destabilization or this strange sense that you're not really you, but the truth is that you are more likely to be waking up to who you actually are than you are likely to be being taken out of who you are. I mean, and it has taken me a long time to find language for Chiron and Eris. And I was onto Eris in the winter of 06, 07. I wrote the first monograph. I wrote the first ever short book about Eris called Facets and Fragments of Self, aided and abetted by Rick Tarnas, who helped, you know, basically guided me through the process of writing, author of Cosmos and Psyche. At times has been a very, very close colleague of mine. And it was clear that there was a destabilizing influence associated with the media and with exposure to digital conditions about around Eris, which also would break things out of sequence. It would fracture time in a kind of a postmodern way, where a postmodern author, William Burroughs, wrote his book, cut up all the paragraphs and pages, threw it up in the air, put them back together, and that was the book. Most of us don't like to live that way, but that's the way we are living in these kind of postmodern times. Chiron is here to help you sort this out. And Chiron does not always feel good. To some people, Chiron can feel fantastic. They can recognize their superpower under the influence of Chiron. They can recognize their deep sense of contact under the influence of Chiron. They can feel as if they have finally had a lens dropped in front of them where they can actually see what's going on, or they've got a spotlight in their hands and they're able to like look around in the dark. And the world can be pretty dark. So if you are feeling like you are having some sense of destabilization or instability, consider that. Look up everything I've written about the Chiron-Eris conjunction, and this is about exposure to digital conditions. And you are not likely to be the type who wants to live your life on the digital plane. But in order to survive in our time, you at least have to be good at it. And good at it does not mean avoiding. Good at it means a talent, an ability, and bringing love into the digital dream. And keeping the space as warm and as beautiful as you possibly can keep it, if only as an act of dharma, if only as if doing your part to act as if to hold the world together. Next incident in Aries. This is the, I'm not going to say as much about this. This is about the conjunction of Saturn and Neptune, which has been forming all year, and it's going to finally land in the first degree of Aries in February. What this is doing is, first of all, it is providing presence and substance in the 12th house, which is very important for you. If something is missing, I don't know how you look in the 12th house because I'm pulling up the cushions on the couch, right? And you find your debit card from, like, you know, 1993 in the couch cushions, right? Well, that's a 12th house. That's a 12th house metaphor. You know, where do socks go? Where do Bic lighters go? Where do guitar picks go? Well, suddenly there's a couple of huge guitar picks waiting for you in the. So they're so big you can't even. You know, there's like the world's biggest guitar pick, which I'm sure that Fender Guitars has made and brought to a musical conference. There's two enormous things that are entering the 12th house. And what I view the combination of Saturn and Neptune as is a formative process, an alchemical process, a synthesis process. When I had my breakthrough on synthesis when I was studying the astrology of the 1950s, along with certain developments in the better living through chemistry field and the nuclear field. And you look at charts like the hydrogen bomb, and I don't quite exactly remember some of the other charts I did. I've charted various breakthrough memoranda out of the bowels of the corporations like Monsanto and GE. There's often, not often, the most annoying speech tick of our times. Often. Like, listen. Often, a combination of Saturn and Neptune. And that gave me the concept of, it's obvious though, synthesis. Synthesis is taking known substances and making some new as heretofore, is that a word? Unknown. Uninvented undeveloped substance. And this is what's going on in your 12th. You have your options open. You have resources, inner psychic resources available. So look for them. And I'm going to keep saying more about this, and I'm going to be developing the story, particularly in the 2026 annual. And also look at the Aries reading if you have access to it. Okay, one last thing. And then we're going to move into some other corners of the chart. And we're now 40 minutes into this reading, and I haven't said, like, congratulations, Uranus is leaving your sign. So the first thing I'm going to say when I'm done explaining this last thing is, congratulations, Uranus is leaving your sign. Uranus is leaving your sign and leaving you transformed. One last bit, Cilicia. 12th house, first of all, innately, no matter what sign is involved, from Vedic astrology, we know, and I know this from Callie Halverson, my former BFF feminist astrologer and the author of the Her Star website, wicked, wicked funny woman who sadly died like 20 years ago. Big loss for all of us in astrology, because she was a force to be reckoned with. And agree with her or disagree with her, we all fucking loved her. Callie Halverson. She said, you know, the 12th house is the house of the pleasures of the bed. She knew that I had a strong interest in understanding sexuality through astrology. She said, pleasures of the bed, Adi Vedic, are in the 12th house. Ah, 12th house, house of dreams, house of the unmanifest, house of experiences that are shamanic or, let's say, episodic transcendence. You are in this exalted space for some period of time. And it makes sense. And it's kind of, well, it's not a nocturnal house, but it sure feels like nocturnal. Salacia, it's very slow mover, 270-year orbit, spending a lot of time in Aries now, has the property of, in my view, and I'm sure that there's not one other astrologer who will agree with me on this, which is often the case, so who cares, about the sex that is appropriate for you. And by sex, I mean the mode of sexual expression, the kind of relationships that you want to have, and the way that you feel right expressing yourself as a sexual being. And we know that you are a sexual being. There are no Tauruses who are not in some way, as a primary mode of identity, sexual beings. I have the world's record for Taurus girlfriends and one boyfriend and therapist. I know about this. And so... this is important. It is important that you respect who you actually are, as opposed to the pressure that you are put under to be something. And that something is likely to be like LGBTQI or A. That's what we're all being flogged onto the rainbow flag. And look, you know, I mean, my rainbow flag looks like that picture behind me. So I'm not averse in any way to any form of experimentation. What I'm averse to is the imposition of political concepts on biological sexuality. And that's what's going on. It does not actually work. It is absolutely meaningless except to manufacture misery. So why am I bringing Salacia up now? Well, that's because Salacia is an aspect to this group that I'm calling the Family Hunger Games group. And I will put both articles in the series, in the Family Hunger Games series so far. I'm writing one a year. Let's see if I maybe write another one sooner. Is in your ninth house. And what the ninth house is your religious and spiritual orientation. It used to be the house of the church. There barely is a church now. And some people, church is at the center of their lives, but not like it was. People are not sending their third child into the priesthood or whatever it is. First child inherits the family business. Second child goes into the military. How does that work? the church is much less supreme than it was. However, what we do have and not cannot escape is an existential orientation and a sense of the possibilities, a sense of what is possible in existence. And this appears to be very powerfully governed by the limitations placed on you by your family more than for most people. Everyone has this. We are all raised under the thumb, under the emotional influence. The book, by the way, to read is called A General Theory of Love. So if you want to understand the relationship between family and the emotional development of very young people, A General Theory, it's an easy, beautiful book to read. I'm told it ends in the end advocates the use of psychotropic drugs, which I would just, if I didn't see that when I read it in therapy training as a Hakomi therapist. If I saw it now, I would just cut those pages out because it's completely wrong. But they get everything else right. And the influence of your family is raging through, and it rages through on the level of religiosity. And you may not come across as religiosity. You don't have to be like the guys walking around when they elect the Pope, when they wear the dress and the hat and the yarmulke and the red pointy shoes and bolts of fabric going by, and Vatican tailors working 24/7. Every tailor in Italy, and then these guys walking around all pious in dresses. No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that it is what comes through the Capricorn 10th house is likely to be what you think of as some form of unquestioned truth, including the truth of having any respect at all for the beliefs of other people, besides, you know, not like baldly offending them. But just because your mother believed it doesn't mean it's worth shit, or papa, or whoever else, or church indoctrination. And what's going on right now is, and this is very likely to be church indoctrination through the family, family indoctrination through the excuse of the church. They all come clumbing close together. And remember, the church is a government. Square, Salacia, ah. So if you are trying to set yourself free in some way, and I promise you, there is no self-actualization without sexual self-actualization. You are not free to be yourself in any way, shape, or form whatsoever until you have claimed a real measure of your sexual freedom. And that begins with knowing something about your innate sense of who you are, as opposed to all of the pressure that we're put under to be someone else or be something else following a whole other agenda that has nothing to do with you, who you ever were or who you ever are. It's just another form of the meat grinder. And so this is going to be grinding along. And it's like you may the typical kind of response is, ah, I feel this. I feel this. I want to do this. I want to feel this. This is actually how I feel. This is actually who I am. And then the response is guilt. Ah. This little thing here easily could manifest either as a guilt machine or a repository of guilt, and equally as a kind of a cave where you can go splunking and find things in there that are not guilt. But you have to go in to find this. Capricorn is kind of organized like the labyrinthine cave. And any activity in Capricorn is splunking unless it's Pluto, which is like the United States thinking it bombed Iran by dropping a bunker buster into the thing, which did nothing. Why not send in a spy? Why drop a million-pound bomb? All right, let's talk about a couple of other things. First of all, I promise to congratulate you on mostly having survived Uranus through your sign. But let's very quickly look and see when Uranus, and I have to do this five more times, is in the first degree of Gemini. It went in a little bit earlier this year after 7 years in Taurus. And Chiron makes its big ingress into Taurus in 1819. Very turbulent, very disruptive years. Very turbulent, disruptive years for sex and for the relationships between men and women. And make no mistake, the relationships between men and women are under attack. Primary, top level priority of transhumanism is to completely mess up men's and women's abilities to relate to one another as men and as women, not as like people wearing gray uniforms. Uranus goes back into, no, 2020, Gemini, 2026. Okay, Uranus goes back into Taurus on November 7, 2025. A lot goes on in November. And then it's going to be retrograde. It'll station direct. Let's see when that is. Stations direct February 3rd, another big era. And then it goes back into Gemini on April 25th. So for about 5 more months between November, December, January, February, March, April, 6 months. There's 6 more months of Uranus in Taurus, 6 months after it has spent 7 years, more than 7 years. What this has kind of like, it's kind of like the, have you ever seen the Gary Larson cartoon that was didn't make it in? You'd have to be deep state Gary Larson fan to have like the rejects. It's a chicken sitting in a diner, and he calls the waitress over, who's another chicken, and says, "Excuse me, I order these babies over easy." And you look on the plate, you can see the plate, and it's a bunch of human babies. If you can imagine like scrambled babies, it looks like scrambled babies. And it's brilliant. I've got to find this. It is my number one favorite Gary Larson. "Excuse me, I order these babies over easy," or something. Okay, so the scrambled babies is what happened to you under the influence of Uranus in Taurus. There are two no more different concepts than Uranus and Taurus, except one possible combination is that Kronos cuts off the balls of Uranus, throws them in the sea, and out of the sea, out of the balls, comes Venus. That's the Botticelli's Venus. That's Venus being born soon after Kronos castrated his father, Uranus, creator god, and threw his nuts in the sea, and then out comes Venus. There's this kind of like, whoa, I'll go all the way around back. Eventually, you come back around. But that said, Uranus is about technology and about science and about inventions and about, there's a very powerful electrical influence and a group influence. Ah, this cannot be forgotten. Holy crow. Yes, because the group influence is the tribalizing influence. And that's what electricity does. So this has messed with you. And it's put you under a lot of pressure. And you are not necessarily a Luddite. I mean, you might have a nice car that has like all kinds of bells, whistles, and gadgets in it. And, you may like your digital dough cooker. But I would imagine that if you're a baker, there's no feeling more than you love more than actually working the dough. You don't want the fucking machine to make the dough, because you can't feel it. What's the fun? This is Mr. Celiac. I could knead dough all day long. Wheat dough, it's the best. So you have, it's a little bit, even though all this crazy stuff's going on in Aries, you have also been kind of toasted by Uranus going through Taurus, and that is going to cool off. And what happens in the next act after that cools off is you get a major reckoning with your values having now emerged in this vastly more digitized world. In 2018, 2017, the world was in was in, the world seemed like a patient on the table being electrocuted, right? Like having electrodes twitching all over the place. That was the state of the world in the pre-2020 crisis world. But now it has completely gone over the top. It is absolutely ridiculous. And you now have to adapt to this world. And there's no getting around it. It does not mean that you have to, you know, have every last gadget device, Apple device seamlessly boom, matching with all your bookmarks or the same on every device. It's not, it's not that. It's something else. It is about adapting your values to the rapidly changing values of the digital world. This is not easy. This is very, very difficult. And here we are. I mean, here we are in the midst of this situation. Okay, one last point, and that is that one of the most important things going on in astrology, though you'd never know it because I'm leaving it for the last thing, is Pluto on your solar 10th house. Pluto's going to be on your solar 10th house for another like 17 years. So for the, let's just say, borrowing from Patrick Walker, for the foreseeable future, Pluto will be a factor in your 10th house, and that is Aquarius. And that, too, is a sign associated with Uranus, associated with the electronic and the digital realm, associated with inventors and inventions. And Pluto is calling you to a state of leadership. And with groups, it seems like this electrical inventor, invention, technology group theme kind of travels together, which would make sense. And now Pluto is calling attention to it. And Pluto is calling you into leadership here. It is compelling you into leading. And leading is always by example. Even if it's corporate, even if you're a manager or a mini CEO or the real CEO, you've got your own business, whatever it may be. And if you have your own business, please don't call yourself the chief executive officer. Call yourself something else. Call yourself like cook and bottle washer, right? We have to, I think, exhibit a little bit of humility in our small businesses, right? And it's not, nobody thinks you're more important because you're the chief executive officer and the president of like your, bakery, right? Oh, see, well, more likely you sit and you try to like find the best source of organic flour, for under $1,000 a bag. But in any event, you are, whether you like it or not, in a position to be a leader of the people, whatever you want to call that role, the coup, the CEO, the, whatever. That's where you find it, is in the 10th house. And so this is a power that you want to wear, whatever that represents for you. The importance of the moment is that the like theme of this is, first of all, leading by example. And second, I lost my train of thought there. The leading by example is essential. And then there is your relationship to the group around you that I would strongly propose here. You want to be as humble as possible and not as plutonic as possible, because the overwhelming urge is to be plutonic, to like concentrate power. That is not going to work. That is not, and it's not the example that you want to set. And people are most likely to follow your example in your environment. And so this is a take, step gently, step lightly. All of this said, and tremendous potential for success in all of this. I mean, you have, in many ways, this is a... you have a very good setup, given how many planets have changed signs. And by the way, there's an introductory video that should be on your delivery page, generically describing all the planets that have changed signs, giving a sense of what the planetary pattern is. And as I've mentioned, it lands differently for everyone. It's going to be a whole new reading for Gemini and a whole new reading for for cancer, and then for cancer, a Pluto winds up in the eighth house, and for Leo, Pluto winds up in the seventh house, and much more influential in relationships, and for Virgo, Pluto winds up in the sixth house, and all this stuff. But for you, this is a pretty good way to have things, and it always feels good to get an outer planet out of your sign. It always is like. The pressure of an outer planet going through your sign for like 8 years is a lot of pressure. And so that is just, it's kind of like burping a Tupperware. And then the next big thing, and Sedna has left. So this is, you'll hear that I'm talking about the Sedna-Uranus conjunction, Uranus-Sedna conjunction in Gemini as a form of environmental awareness, a form of situational awareness. Listen for those cues. I'll be talking about this throughout this reading, especially going to get into it in the Gemini reading, because I'm going to emphasize the sign itself in most of these readings. Even though we're going outside of bounds, it's important to know that in 27-28, Chiron returns to Taurus, the sign of its discovery. So that's waiting in the wings. And the sense of brewing is the kind of thing that you want to off-gas. And one of the ways you do that is by, even though you have all the stuff from the 12th, well, Mars rules the 12th. And Mars ain't in Aries right now. Mars currently is in Libra, soon to be in Taurus. Mars got a long way to go before it comes back to Aries. And so your representative of the 12th house in the world is Mars, wherever it may be, including in your natal chart. Look it up. Look it up. Mars position and aspects. Write to me if you don't understand it. And what I'm getting at here is that there is an agent, an ambassador, a delegate out of the 12th house, out in the world, and that is Mars. And that means acting based on real desire, really what you really want, and to not be in a whole denial drama trip about what you really want. You may not be able to get what you want, but you should at least know what it is. And be real with yourself, because the 12th can be a real cesspool of denial, and you want to get out of denial, clear cancel on denial as much as you possibly can. That's what I got to say to you, for you, with you, thanks to you, because of you. All right. Signing off for Taurus. Lots of love. And bye for now.